You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 2nd of March 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, it looks like we are going to suffer another migrant crisis, another invasion of Europe, another orchestrated invasion of Europe. And the reason for this one is quite complicated, and you know I really can't see the logic behind it. What we've got Russia and Syria are both trying to finally liberate Idlib, which is the final part of Syria that is yet to be taken back under the Syrian government's control. We had a treaty. A ceasefire that was arranged 2 years previously between Syria and Turkey and Russia. And the deal was that there would be a ceasefire and the Syrian forces would stop firing on the terrorists in Idlib. And Turkey was supposed to secure the main highway to stop that from being attacked that went from Idlib to Damascus. They were supposed to separate the terrorists from the moderate Muslims, the protesters, and they were supposed to guarantee that the terrorists would stop shelling on the Syrian troops. And that was 2 years ago. And none of that's been done. They failed to separate the terrorists from the moderate Muslims. They failed to stop the terrorists from shelling the Syrian troops, and they failed to secure the highway. So quite reasonably, Russia and the Syrian armed forces have begun another offensive on Idlib. Unknown to the Syrian forces, Turkish soldiers were embedded with the terrorists. 35 Turkish soldiers were killed during an air raid. No explanation has been given for why Turkish soldiers were there with the Islamic terrorists. Of course, we know that Turkey has been sponsoring these Islamic terrorists. When the Syrian war first started, they were the ones that were facilitating them, allowing them to go through Turkey and into Syria, allowing them to have their slave markets in Turkey. And then we had the attempted coup on Erdogan. And that was prevented. And the only reason it was prevented is because Putin heard that there was going to be this coup and he told Erdogan about it. So we saw a pivot from Erdogan to Putin. Whereas up until then, there had been a lot of bad blood between them because there had been a Russian jet had been shot down and he wasn't given any help at all. And because of this, it looked like Turkey was going to pivot towards Russia. And Trump wasn't very happy about this. But then over the last couple of weeks, we've heard that Trump has effectively given Erdogan the green light to go into Syria. And Turkey just wants to carve out sections of Syria for himself. And he's apparently been given the green light to do this by Donald Trump. So we end up in the state that we're in now, where you've got 35 Turkish soldiers that have been killed in with these terrorists. And you would think that Turkey would be not very happy with Syria and Russia and wanting to retaliate against Syria or Russia. But instead of that, Erdogan has decided to retaliate against Europe, against the EU. And he said that what he's going to do, or what he's actually done, is open the borders to supposedly Syrian refugees, who are not Syrian. You can see in the pictures, you've got black Africans there, you've got Afghans there, you've got Pakistanis there, you've got very, very few actual Syrians. Most of them are far too dark to be Syrians. And instead of notifying the EU that he was going to do this, the EU still thinks that the agreement they had with Turkey still stands. The agreement with Turkey was that the EU would pay Turkey 5 billion euros in order to set up camps for refugees and prevent them from coming into Europe. So Erdogan has had all this money, he's had 5 billion euros. And now he has opened the floodgates. And he hasn't just opened the borders. They've literally gone to the prisons where criminal migrants were being held. That's as migrants that had actually committed crimes in Turkey. And they've opened up the prisons and they've said, we're going to give you a free lift to the border. We're opening the borders. And they sort of implied by that that Europe was opening the borders to them all as well. And a fleet of buses turned up at the refugee camps with the refugees being told the borders are being opened, you can now make your way to Europe, and we're going to take you there in these buses. So the buses turned up, carried them from Turkey right the way down through Turkey to the border with Greece and apparently the border with Bulgaria, where these invaders, because that's what they are, have then started cutting wire, setting fires, throwing missiles. And there's plenty of footage of it. They're all shouting Allah snack bar while they do this. I mean, this is jihad, basically. It's jihad against Europe. It's an invasion of Europe. An Islamic invasion of Europe being orchestrated by Erdogan. I'm not quite sure what he wants out of this, whether he wants more money. I mean, he's going to win either way, isn't he? Either way, either he's going to get more money, or more Muslims are going to be allowed into Europe and the Islamization of Europe will continue, which are both Erdogan's goals. That is the goal of Islam, is to Islamize the whole world and have it all under Sharia law. That's the whole point of Islam, is to take nations over and put them under Sharia law. It's political Islam. Half of the religion is the political side of it rather than the religious side of it. And they're not interested in people studying the scriptures and coming to the realization that it's the truth, which is the Christian way, which is the way that wants you to come to the religion by your own volition and by your own free will. In Islam, they're quite happy just to force people to obey the religion. What they will do is they'll make life as uncomfortable as possible for you until you agree to be a Muslim. That's what the jizya tax is. They have a special tax that everybody who is not a Muslim has to pay. And of course, there are crimes that Muslims could not commit against other Muslims, but that they can commit against the unbelievers. And of course, we know all about these verses about killing the unbelievers, beheading the unbelievers. Anything that your right hand possesses, you can have it as your temporary wife, which is basically the excuse for sex slavery that's gone on for hundreds and hundreds of years, which is the same excuse that these grooming gangs use. Incidentally, with this grooming gang report that's being held from us, they will have discovered that if they did a proper investigation. And a lot of people are very annoyed that this report isn't being released into the public, but it came out over the weekend that not even the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, has been allowed to see that report. She's been demanding to see that report, and it's being held from her. And it's being held from her by the civil service, which is a part of the deep state. That's the group of people that remain the same regardless of who's been voted in and who has been voted out. They are the people that are responsible for the continuation of the progressive agenda, and they are not even allowing the Home Secretary to see this report. And of course, there has been historical bad blood between Hindus and Muslims. There still is to this day because of the Muslim invasion of India and the Islamization of India. You can see over there right now that they've had to make laws in India to allow refugees in from the surrounding Islamic countries because the Hindus in those countries are persecuted. So maybe, you know, maybe there's this concern there that Priti Patel might be biased against the Muslims. Of course, we look at her and we say, well, she's non-white, she shouldn't be Home Secretary. But I think she'd probably make a better Home Secretary than a Muslim Home Secretary would make, for instance. But getting back to this invasion of Europe. So we've got all these hordes that are turning up on the border of Greece. Greece has said that they're going to respond to this with the army, with the navy. They're going to secure their borders. They've sent 50 ships there. And we can see the footage of them firing tear gas at them. The mainstream media, of course, has been claiming that it's women, children, these poor refugees. And you do have to have a certain amount of pity for them because they are pawns in this. They are being used as pawns by Erdogan. They're being used as cannon fodder by Erdogan. And that's not their fault, but we can't allow them into Europe. We have to treat them as the enemy, which I'm hoping Greece is going to do. But you've got a bit of a conflict there in Greece as well, because on the Isle of Lesbos, which is one of the main destinations for these invaders, they get in their boats, they push off from Turkey, and they land on the shores of Lesbos and demand to be allowed into Europe. Because, of course, Lesbos is very, very close to the shore of Turkey, but it's actually part of Greece. So on Lesbos, you've got refugee holding centres, which are meant to hold, I forget what it is, something like 3,000 or 300,000. And they've actually got three times that many people that are actually within this holding centre. And what's happened to the Greek islanders of Lesbos is the same as has happened to the French villagers of Calais. They've had their lives ruined by this. They've had these so-called refugees tramping through their gardens, stealing things from them, breaking into their houses, raping their daughters. The same thing that we see happen wherever we see these migrant holding centres, basically. So they've been protesting against this, and the Greek government has said, well, I'll tell you how we're going to deal with this problem. We'll increase the migrant holding centre there. So we want to build a massive centre for holding refugees. So, of course, the Lesbos Islanders, they don't want this. That just means that their problems are going to be increased. The more refugees they have on that island, the more problems are going to be caused for the indigenous Greek people that live on that island. So they have protested against this. They said, no, we don't want to have a big migrant centre on our island. So the Greek government responded by sending a ship full of riot police to be offloaded on the Isle of Lesbos and start cracking heads. But by this time, the whole island was taking part in this protest, and the whole island is united in being against wanting any more refugees on that island. So they ended up actually defeating the riot police. The riot police had to retreat back to the ship and go back to the mainland. And on their way, they decided to smash all the windscreens of the cars that were parked there, just out of spite, I guess, not being able to do their job or not being able to defeat the islanders. The problem is what you've got there is you have literally got the police posed against the people there. Rather than them being the police being against criminals, you've got the police against the entire island. And to start smashing windscreens on the way back is, you know, that's incredibly bad behaviour. That is not going to endear the police to anyone, is it? I would hope that there would be an inquiry into that. I mean, I have heard that the Greek police are pretty lawless in some respects, but you would imagine there would be an inquiry into that. But how can they sort of square the two responses? On the one hand, the Greek government is saying, well, we're going to prevent these refugees from coming in, and we've sent in 50 ships, and we're firing tear gas. And then on the other hand, in Lesbos, they're firing the tear gas at their own people and demanding that they start allowing these refugees in. There's boatloads that has been turning up at Lesbos, and the boatloads have been turned away. Journalists have been flocking to where all this is happening, of course, and the journalists have been turned away and attacked by the Greeks because they're facilitating this. The journalists themselves have been liaising with the invaders in their boats, telling them where to land their boats on the shore, and then setting up film crews and staging pictures. Now, there's one pretty famous picture that's sort of appearing everywhere, and it's of a black woman with her arms raised up in the air with dreadlocks. Now, obviously, that's not a Syrian, is it? It's a black female. It's not a Syrian. And this picture is being put around by the left, and, oh, look at how delighted, how happy this woman is, the miracle of getting to Europe. And it's entirely staged. It's completely staged. On Twitter, the video is doing the rounds that shows you how this was set up. And you can see that she keeps repeating the pose, basically, for the camera. And this is all staged. The images that you will see of women or of children is entirely staged to try and get the British public or the European public to accept these invaders in. And the real face of them is the ones that are shouting Allah Snakbar and throwing petrol bombs and setting fire to things and just destroying the landscape. There are other videos where it just looks like a wasteland, where these non-whites have tried to come into Greece. They've just thrown all the rubbish everywhere. There's a footage of one that's just come out of prison, and he's saying, I haven't got any money, and I haven't got a phone. Europe's got to let me in. Because it's not just refugees that Erdogan has turned against Europe, as I mentioned earlier, it's these prisoners as well, which is exactly what they did when they invaded Syria and when they invaded Libya. In Saudi Arabia there, they opened up the prisons and said to the people that were in the prisons, we will absolve you of your prison sentence. We will scratch out the prison sentence if you will agree to go on jihad against Muammar Gaddafi, or if you will agree to go on jihad against Bashar al-Assad. And of course, a lot of these criminals were quite happy to do that. And it seems that you've got the same thing here. Instead of Erdogan saying, well, we'll let you off your prison sentence if you go on jihad into Europe, they've just said, you're free to go, and we're going to bus you down to the border right now. And as I say, it does look as if the Turks actually told these people that Europe had opened their borders as well. They were expecting to get to the border with Greece, and they were expecting to be allowed in. I mean, it's a really nasty trick to have played upon them. And at the same time, it is just guaranteed to cause as much bloodshed, as much chaos as possible. And the leftists and the progressives are all wringing their hands and saying that Greece needs to open up the borders. But it seems that the Greek people are united, that they really don't want this. There's a mass movement in Greece that is saying that this has got to stop. Something has got to be done about this. And, you know, what it all comes down to is that Syria is just about to take that last little bit of land that was taken away from them. And this is the last attempt of the US, NATO, Israel, EU, Turkey to prevent that from happening. Erdogan is hoping that America will help Turkey, basically, in trying to keep Idlib for themselves. What Erdogan wants to do is take the bit of land there and put all the refugees on it, but it's part of Syria. It's not part of Turkey. It's the Syrian people's land. You've also then got the issue of you could end up with Turkey at war with Russia, which I don't think will happen, as I say, because Erdogan owes Putin, basically, for, I mean, the only reason why Erdogan is still the Prime Minister of Turkey or the President of Turkey is because Putin warned him about that coup. So I don't think we will see that happen. Another side to this that isn't really being mentioned now, but it was at the start of this, was that Erdogan threatened to do this for 72 hours. He said he was going to open the borders up for 72 hours. So I don't know if that's what he's done, just to sort of give Europe a taste of what he's capable of doing. But the easiest way to deal with this is just to say, no, none of them are going to come in, and they will be treated as enemy combatants. And that would prevent them from doing what they're doing. They would turn around and they would walk back to Turkey. We got the proof of this with Italy when Matteo Salvini was the first minister of Italy. He managed to stop 99% of the boats coming to Italy simply because he refused to allow them in. If they broke down at sea, they were stuck at sea. They're not going to be brought into Italy. So if Europe was to say, these people are not coming in, and if the Greek army was to fire on them, kill a few of them, yes, that's, shocking loss of life for the individual. But when you think there's 4 million of these people that want to break into Europe and take what Europe has for themselves, then what other option have we got? You have to prevent them from coming in. They would know that we mean business then, if the army was to fire upon them. Now, there is one country in Europe that has suggested that, Poland. I believe it was the foreign minister. He actually warned them. He said, if any of you set foot in Poland illegally, you will be shot. So Poland has already stated that they will treat them like enemy combatants. And I'm just waiting for Greece to say that as well. Another side to this, which hasn't been talked about a little bit, is the worry about coronavirus. If you've got people that are coming in from Iran that are saying that they're refugees and they're coming from Iran, they may very well be contaminated with coronavirus. There's the worry about Africans coming in with coronavirus. But that worry isn't so acute, because looking at the figures, and this is something that they're really not telling you about, coronavirus does appear to be racially discriminatory. It seems to go for particular ethnicities. Like in Iran, you've got a very high percentage of people that are actually dying from it. If you look at somewhere like Northern Europe, people have caught it. You've got a low percentage of people that are dying from it. It's been caught in Africa. And yet again, you've got a very, very low percentage of people that have died from it. Only 3 people in Africa have died from it. And there is a theory that the sort of people that are going to die from it are the sort of people that don't have much of a resistance to flus and the colds. And if you look back at when we had the flu epidemic that killed loads of people in 1890, Italians had a very, very, very high death rate because they're not used to having the flu because of the climate. And Iran has a climate that you're not likely to get the flu either. So they haven't got any resistance to having these kinds of viruses. Whereas certain other people will have a resistance to it. So thankfully, we're not going to see a huge explosion of coronavirus from blacks coming into Europe. And they aren't actually going to really have a problem with coronavirus because it just doesn't really affect them. But unfortunately, it does affect the Italians, which is a worry. But that may not affect the way that they talk about this. I mean, they may say, well, look, you know, we can't allow any large numbers of these refugees in because, you know, they may well have this virus. And this is being suggested in America to prevent them coming in from the Mexican border, that there may be incidences of coronavirus with them. But this is really just one of many diseases that these refugees bring with them. I mean, we often talk about the crime rate that follows them and the horrific violence that a lot of them are involved in and the terrorism. We don't often talk about the diseases that they bring with them. Lots of diseases that we haven't seen in the West or in Europe for 100 years. These diseases are increasing. The antibiotic resistance is going up all the time. And the problem with that is because in these third world countries, you can just buy antibiotics at the market. In Europe, they will only give you antibiotics as a very last resort because they don't want people to build up or diseases to build up a resistance to them. But in the third world, you just buy them at the market. So they have antibiotic-resistant diseases that they will be bringing into Europe. So all of this is going on at the moment. Brexit has just gone into the shadows, basically. You think just 3 months back, Brexit was the most important issue, overshadowing absolutely everything, not just in Britain, but around the world. And now we've got all this going off. We've got a war that we thought had almost finished, flaring up again in Syria. We've got another huge invasion that looks like it could be beginning, that we thought had slowed down. And just think about those numbers. 4 million of these non-whites claiming to be Syrian refugees. Erdogan is holding them. And that's his wild card, isn't it? He can let that go at any time. He can just start the invasion, as he just has done. Will he stop doing it after the 72 hours, like the original threat, or will he just continue doing it? It's like he's blackmailing the EU. And what is it he wants? Does he want money? Does he want the EU to back the Turks in Syria to take that land there? And why is it that the EU is being blamed for these Turkish soldiers being killed? The response that the EU needs to have is to neutralize this threat. Say, no, they are not coming in. They will be treated as enemy combatants because Turkey is using them as enemy combatants. Turkey is using them as troops to break into Europe and as a threat to get Europe to do whatever it is Erdogan wants Europe to do. So the only response is harsh reprisals. These people will have to be repelled. They will have to be repelled by firepower, if necessary. And that will neutralize the threat. That will prevent Erdogan from being able to blackmail Europe. And it will protect our European people from the threat that these people pose, the threat of crime, the threat of terrorism, the threat of interbreeding, the threat of rape, the drain on our resources, the replacement of our people. There is nothing positive that Europe can get from this. And all the while, Europe is refusing to take in white refugees like South Africans or Ukrainians. There's nowhere on earth we should be taking in refugees claiming to be from Syria that have passed through another country to get to Greece. Greece obviously can't take them in. And it's only 90 miles from, I believe it's the southern tip of Syria, to Saudi Arabia. The richest Muslim country in the world is only 90 miles away from Syria. And they've taken in no refugees. And they've even got huge temporary camps there. In Saudi Arabia, they have a huge temporary city that they build for when Muslims arrive for the Hajj. So all they would need to do there is just erect these tents, and they could put these Muslim refugees in there. So why don't they do it? Why don't they do it? Well, they say because the threat of terrorism is too high. And they are the ones who would know. Don't forget, these are Muslims that speak the same language. That's what they say. The threat of terrorism is too high. So what are we doing? Allowing them into Europe. There's a hashtag, I stand with Greece, which is showing support for the Greek Navy and for the Greek army in repelling this invasion. I have yet to find out what's going on in Bulgaria because, of course, Turkey borders with Bulgaria as well. And no doubt they will be trying to break into Europe through that route too. Hopefully I'll find out a little bit more about what's happening in Bulgaria in time for tomorrow's episode. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.